Welcome to Holistic Trauma Healing, a podcast that empowers you to heal trauma in the same way it has affected you as a whole person. I am Lindsay Lockett, your host. I have discovered a profound path to healing trauma that allows us to move out of the role of victim and into the role of empowered and conscious creator of our best possible reality. I offer hope, healing insights, and practical tips as you get to the root of how trauma has affected every part of your existence and how to weave a new web of life that isn't ruled by the past. Hello, hello, Trauma Healer Circle members. Welcome to your second bonus episode for October 2021. I am completely overjoyed because we have finally lit our wood stove. I don't think we've ever gotten to October 22nd without lighting the wood stove before. In fact, I had a notification come up on my phone from a memory of last year. And this day last year, we had like 2 feet of snow on the ground. We have no snow on the ground right now, and I'm so grateful for that. I am not ready for snow season. I'm so grateful that we've had a really mild and extended fall. In fact, last week, it was 74 degrees here one day, which is like unheard of. And of course, that's concerning because it's like more proof that the climate is changing and the globe is warming up. But to be honest, like, winter usually starts for us sometimes at the beginning of October, and when it doesn't end until the end of May, it makes for a really long, dark, cold, you know, period of time that's like most of the year, and it can be like really draining and exhausting. And so I'm grateful that winter hasn't fully set in yet, but I'm really grateful that David lit the wood stove for me because I got into my feminine, and instead of telling him that I was cold and that I wanted him to light the wood stove, I instead like went upstairs and I put on a show where I was like shivering and trying to warm up my hands, and I put my hands on his face to show him how cold they were, and he was finally like, okay, fine, I'll go light the fire, and we had a good laugh about it. That's been something fun that I've been learning to do, is to not use my words as much. Whenever I am trying to express a need or a want to my partner, I'm trying to use more my expression of art, like my body language and different flavors of the feminine. And so one of the flavors of the feminine is like a damsel in distress. And so I was putting on my damsel in distress flavor of the feminine to get what I wanted, which was for my partner to light a fire for me. And this has been a fun thing that we've been practicing with feminine and masculine essence for the last 3 months as we've been working with our coach. And our relationship coach is one of our circle members, Evelyn Hale. If you don't follow Evelyn, you definitely need to. She is one badass coach. Honestly, we both just loved working with her, and she helped us get past some blocks in our relationship that have existed for a really long time, that we were like hitting our heads on a ceiling over and over trying to get past these blocks ourselves, and we just weren't getting there. And in 12 weeks of working with Evelyn, I'm not going to say that like every issue we have in our relationship is totally solved, but I will say that we are in such a better place. Not that we were in a bad place before, but like we were in a good place before, and now we're in an even better place. And a lot of healing has taken place, a lot of release has taken place, a lot of responsibility, each other taking responsibility for ourselves has happened. And it was just a transformational, life-changing 3-month experience to work with Evelyn in her relationship rebirth intensive. So if you and your partner are hitting some roadblocks when it comes to your relationship, if there are some patterns that you're not able to figure out and tease apart on your own, if you're trying to figure out if you should stay together or if you need to uncouple, then go work with Evelyn. You can find her on Instagram at inner.light.healing, or send her an email, evelyn@evelynhale.com. I will link to that below in the show notes. But we just had our last coaching session with her yesterday, and I couldn't record a bonus podcast episode without telling you, the rest of the circle, that one of our very own members is kind of a badass when it comes to trauma coaching and relationship coaching. So that is my plug for Evelyn. I'm not getting anything out of that. We don't have any kind of a affiliate relationship or referral. It's just me like genuinely expressing my gratitude and appreciation for what she just did for my husband and I for the last 12 weeks. So go check that out. Hang out with Evelyn on Instagram, send her a message or an email if you're interested in working with her for the relationship rebirth or just her trauma coaching in general. She's just really, really, really fantastic. And I'm happy to have her in this group. She's such a valuable resource and a valuable addition to our circle. Okay, so now let's pivot over into what I want to talk to you about today, and that is how we consciously create a reality that is no longer ruled by our past. So if you listen to the public podcast, then you know whenever you're listening to the intro with the music, I talk about weaving a new web of life and creating a reality that isn't ruled by the past anymore. And it occurred to me today that I haven't ever really elaborated on what that means. And maybe more importantly, I've never elaborated on how. How do you create a reality that isn't ruled by your past? What does consciously creating a reality look like? And what are the practical steps we need to take in order to do that? I'm very much a give me the practical steps kind of person. And I know sometimes like boiling things down into just practical steps can be a bit reductionist because the journey that we're all on isn't about do step A and then do step B and then do step C and then do step D. Like it's not a linear process. And one of the things that had me hung up for a long time whenever I was trying to start this business that I now have was I was trying to make it into a linear process. And I kept trying to reduce it down and simplify it into a linear process. And then, as you know, I was on an acid trip and I was in the woods and I came across the spider and the spider medicine and the web was with me for that whole day. And I realized like it's not a linear process. It's like a web. And just like every part of the spider's web in some way is connected to every other part of the spider's web, so that if one part of the web vibrates, the whole web vibrates, so is this journey that we're on. Everything is connected together. So you can't just do a neat, you know, dot to dot line. You have to look at it more as like a web where if you're doing relationship healing, it is naturally going to affect your, you know, other relationships, or it's naturally going to affect the way that you feel about yourself. Likewise, if you're doing, you know, personal work and trauma healing, that is in turn going to affect how you parent your children or how you interact with your friends or your community or your partner. So everything is connected, and you can't make everything connected when you try to distill it down into a linear process. So that's why I love the metaphor of the spider's web so much. And part of creating a reality that isn't ruled by the past is knowing that every decision that we make, whether from a place of consciousness or unconsciousness, it is having a vibrational effect on the rest of our lives. And that vibrational effect is the reality. That is the creation of our reality. So we want to be consciously creating that reality, meaning we're doing it from a place of awareness instead of creating a reality that's based on reactivity and victimhood and feeling powerless and hopeless in our lives. So one of the best ways that I can come up with to try to explain this to you and help you simplify how to consciously create a reality that isn't ruled by the past is to read from one of my favorite books, A New Earth by Eckhart Tolle. I think that this should be required reading for everyone. But if you're in my circle and you haven't read this book yet, then I'm telling you right now, like, just turn this episode off, go get the book, read it, and then come back to this episode. But if you can't do that or you don't want to right now, then put a pin in it, put it on your wish list, you know, add it to your cart, go check out later. But read A New Earth by Eckhart Tolle, please. Or listen to it on audiobook. He actually reads it in the audiobook version. And it's really nice to hear Eckhart Tolle himself reading his own work. So there's my plug for A New Earth. So here I want to share what Eckhart says about the birth of emotion. So he says, this is not to say that all thinking and all emotion are of the ego. They turn into ego only when you identify with them and they take you over completely. That is to say, when they become I. An I is in quotation marks there. So when we attach meaning to the feelings that we're having, that's when we tend to get into an unconscious pattern of creating a reality that we don't love. We don't acknowledge that we're creating it. We don't see that it's something we're creating. We see it as something that's happening to us. And the reason why we see it as something that's happening to us is because the story we're telling ourselves is that we're victims of this, that it's not our fault, it's not fair, I didn't choose this. And we have those kinds of beliefs deeply, deeply ingrained in us. And of course, those beliefs start in childhood. And of course, we have things happen to us that we didn't choose and that aren't fair and that weren't our fault. None of that is false. I was about to say none of that is not true, but the definition of not true is false. So none of that is false. However, when we're adults, we do have choice. Most of the time we have choice. You know, not everyone has an extreme story of something happening to them as an adult where they are violated that, you know, obviously they did not choose and is not their fault. Of course, if you've been a victim of any kind of assault, whether sexually or physical assault, like even as an adult, that is not your choice. And that isn't something that you created for yourself. That's not something you've attracted to yourself. So I don't want you to hear that at all. I'm just talking about the like, quote unquote, normal, you know, we'll call it the like normal Western existence of like, living on autopilot, like robots. You know, you get up, you go to a job you hate to pay for things to buy that you don't have time to enjoy because you're tired, because you've overworked, and the cycle keeps going. And so you have a difficult time finding fulfillment and purpose in this life. You know, there's not time for discovering who you are. There's not time for investing in yourself because you don't have the free time or you don't have the money to invest in yourself. And so we have relationships that are built this way where it's like, well, I'm not super happy in my relationship, but it's the only thing I've ever known. And so I'm going to stay in it because it's comfortable. Or I'm not super happy in my relationship, but I have kids with this person, so I should probably stay with them anyway. Or like, yeah, I hate my job, but I should just be thankful that I have a job instead of complaining about my job. Like, so we have these stories that we tell ourselves, right? All of us do it. It's that inner voice in our head. Whether we recognize it as the inner critic or the inner voice or not is a different question. But we all tell ourselves these stories. And we tell ourselves these stories because this is how we make sense, rather not we, but this is how our egos make sense of this world that we're living in. We have to tell ourselves these stories, right? Otherwise, the ego is just too overwhelmed. And the ego assigns meaning to everything. So everything has something to do with you. Everything means something for you. Something is either threatening your well-being or your financial security or your family. Something is, you know, threatening your job. Something is threatening your time. Something is threatening your happiness. Like, the ego makes everything a threat. And the ego makes everything an enemy. And it assigns meaning to feelings that don't really need to have meaning. Our feelings are just feelings. And we could get really complicated here. There's a book called Letting Go by Dr. David Hawkins, which I'll link to below. And he has a really interesting chart about the vibrational frequencies of different emotions. So like fear has the lowest vibrational frequency. Anger has a lower vibrational frequency. Rage has a lower vibrational frequency. And then as you move up into higher frequencies, there's things like right in the middle is like contentment. And then moving up further in the frequencies is things like joy and peace and love. I don't want to get into super complicated things like that, although it is very interesting. And that's kind of where like things like good vibes only comes from, is because our emotions do have vibrational frequencies. We can measure them in hertz. They have a frequency. And so when we are quote unquote vibing higher, we're actually living at a higher frequency because we are embodying the frequencies of joy, peace, and love. Whereas when we're living in a lower frequency, and we all know people like this, like they're embodying the emotions of anger, fear, frustration, disappointment, like they're the victims of their lives. So we all know people who are embodying the higher vibes, and we all know people who are embodying the lower vibes. That's not what this episode is about. This episode is about how to consciously create a reality that isn't ruled by your past, which will naturally lead to living a higher vibrational life. So your life will embody the higher frequency emotions of love, joy, peace, even contentment. You know, even contentment is a better place to be for someone who's lived their whole life in a space of fear and anger. So what I really want to get into today, though, is the ego and how the ego keeps us in a pattern of unconsciously creating our present reality, and then how we begin to move out of that unconscious awareness into conscious awareness, which leads to creating the reality that we want. So the first thing it starts with is like knowing that our egos always, always assign meaning to emotions, and they make everything about I, right? They make everything about I. So I want to go a little further into this book, and I'm going to read a longer excerpt now, and then we'll get into the meat of this episode. So this is what Eckhart Tolle says about emotions and the ego. The ego is not only the unobserved mind, the voice in the head which pretends to be you, but also the unobserved emotions that are the body's reaction to what the voice in the head is saying. We have already seen what kind of thinking the egoic voice engages in most of the time, and the dysfunction inherent in the structure of its thought processes, regardless of content. This dysfunctional thinking is what the body reacts to with negative emotion. The voice in the head tells a story that the body believes in and reacts to. Those reactions are the emotions. The emotions, in turn, feed energy back to the thoughts that created the emotion in the first place. This is the vicious circle between unexamined thoughts and emotions, giving rise to emotional thinking and emotional story making. The emotional component of ego differs from person to person. In some egos, it is greater than in others. Thoughts that trigger emotional responses in the body may sometimes come so fast that before the mind has had time to voice them, the body has already responded with an emotion, and the emotion has turned into a reaction. Those thoughts exist at a pre-verbal stage and could be called unspoken, unconscious assumptions. They have their origins in a person's past conditioning, usually from early childhood. People cannot be trusted would be an example of such an unconscious assumption in a person whose primordial relationships, that is to say, with parents or siblings, were not supportive and did not inspire trust. Here are a few more common unconscious assumptions. Nobody respects and appreciates me. I need to fight to survive. There is never enough money. Life always lets you down. I don't deserve abundance. I don't deserve love. Unconscious assumptions create emotions in the body, which in turn generate mind activity and/or instant reactions. In this way, they create your personal reality. So, isn't that so good? What this means to me is that I have a thought, the mind thinks, right? That's what it's going to do. When your mind is thinking, it doesn't mean you're doing something wrong. It means your mind is doing exactly what it's supposed to do. So the mind thinks. That creates an emotion in your body. In fact, you could try it right now. Think about a time in your life when you were really afraid. Like maybe you were about to get in a car accident and you managed to swerve and avoid the car that was about to hit you. You can think about that and it will create a sensation in your body, right? So you may feel your heart quicken. You may feel like a tightness in your neck or shoulders. You may feel like a butterfly, nauseous feeling in your belly. Whatever it is, you had that thought about a time in your life where you almost had a car accident and you managed to avoid it. But even thinking about it creates that emotion of fear. So think about what it's like in someone who is always unconsciously thinking, you know, their inner voice, that inner chatter, the voice in our head, it's always going, it never shuts up. Sometimes even when we sleep, it doesn't shut up. But that voice is going, and that's creating these sensations in the body, whether it's sensations of fear, of anxiety, of frustration, of disappointment, of confusion, of feeling like a victim, whatever the feeling is. And then they notice the feeling in the body, because of course you feel the feeling in the body, even if you're a head walking around with a body and you're living in your head most of the time. The reason why you're living in your head is because the body is having feelings because of the thoughts you're thinking. You may not connect the dots that your thoughts are creating these feelings in your body. You may not even be aware that you are feeling into your body. But it's pretty easy to see once you have even a little bit of awareness that you think these thoughts and it creates feelings in your body, and then you have thoughts about the feelings because you're assigning meaning to the feelings rather than observing them. So that is the ticket to consciously creating your best possible reality. You have to move from a place of unawareness into a place of awareness. And just having education or information like what I'm sharing right now can be enough for some people to have a light bulb moment. And the light bulb comes on and they're like, oh, I see it now. I have thoughts all the time. They create sensations in my body. And then I think about the sensations in my body, which creates more sensations in my body. And that creates this cycle that never, ever stops. And the way I stop it is to get out completely and start to witness it. So we become the observer. We witness the thoughts, and we can also witness the feelings. So there's no way to just turn off the thoughts. And certainly you can practice meditation and you can get better at watching your thoughts. And some people, when they meditate, when they have a thought, they like to imagine that it's like a cloud in the sky that's floating past, or it's a stick in a river that's floating past. And as soon as that one thought floats past, very soon there's another thought that flows past. And so meditation is just really a practice of like observing thoughts. And when you observe thoughts, when you're aware that the thoughts are happening, that that inner chatter is going on, it can create feeling, or it does create feeling when you assign meaning to the thoughts. So when I was like super, super anxious, I was trying to meditate. Everyone was telling me, Lindsay, just meditate. Just meditate. It'll calm you right down. Just watch your thoughts. Don't react to them. I was in such a dysregulated state that I literally could not comprehend what they were saying, but I tried. So I would sit down and I would close my eyes and I would start to breathe, and I would notice, like, immediately I was feeling more anxiety. Like, I was trying to meditate to reduce the anxiety, but actually made me feel more anxiety, because then I was actually finally present with my thoughts. Whereas before, I was still trying to like go about my daily life and live my life and do the things and work and all of that. And the thoughts were running the show then. But then whenever I sat down and actually sat with the thoughts and was with the thoughts, it got even scarier. I wish I could say it got better, but it actually got worse. And so trying to meditate and watch the thoughts actually made me feel more anxious. And that's why I don't say that meditation is for everyone. Like, if meditation makes you more anxious, then it's not for you. And that's okay. That doesn't mean that you're less spiritual or that you're healing slower or, you know, you're not going to be as good as everyone else. That's not what that means at all. Again, that's the ego coming in and it's attaching an I to the, you know, idea of meditation or of not meditating and what that might mean for your journey or your life. So The thing for me, though, was that I didn't know how to watch the thoughts, and nobody told me that it wasn't just about watching the thoughts, that it was about noticing what sensations were created in my body as a result of those thoughts. So for me, meditation wasn't just about watching the thoughts or being the observer of the thoughts, like watching a stick float down the river. To me, it was about watching the stick float down the river and also dropping into my body and becoming aware of the sensations that were created in my body as I was watching the stick floating down the river. That was the only way that I was ever able to actually connect how my thinking was creating feeling inside my body. And when I had that understanding, and trust me, that did not come immediately, that took me quite some time to get to, but when I had the understanding that for me, it wasn't just about watching the thoughts and observing the thoughts, it was learning how to make the connection between the thoughts and what I was feeling. So when I would sit down and I would observe the thoughts, and mostly they were about my health at that time. So it was like, what's going on in my pelvic floor? Why is my urethra still spasming after 5 months? Why can't I sleep? You know, what does that mean? What is this doing to my body? I wonder how high my cortisol levels are. Like all those kinds of thoughts, right? I couldn't just watch those thoughts and feel better. I had to learn to connect the feeling to the thought first. And once I made that connection, it was so much easier for me to stop assigning meaning to the thoughts and also to the feelings. So the way our thoughts create our reality is through producing a feeling. And when we have a feeling, it always alters the decisions that we make. For example, when I was really struggling with anxiety in late 2018, early 2019, the thought of going out and being with my friends or having people over for dinner and socializing in any way created so much anxiety for me. So I thought about being social, that created a sensation of anxiety in my body. And then the decision or the reaction, you can call it whichever one you want, that I made from that place was to not be with my friends and not be social. So then the reality that I created for myself was one where not only was I anxious all the time, but I was also anxious and isolated and alone because that was what the thought feeling process was producing. That was how I was reacting to the feeling of anxiety. So the reality I'd created for myself was not a reality that I wanted. I was also unconscious that it was the reality I was creating. I still believed that I was a victim of insomnia, a victim of anxiety, a victim of pelvic floor dysfunction. Like I still believed I was a victim of all of these things. And I don't want to go into like, you know, I don't believe that I was a victim. Now looking back, like I was only a victim of myself. Nobody in my life was doing anything that was causing me to feel this way. I wasn't in a bad relationship, even though David and I had been through a lot in 2018. Like I've never been in an abusive relationship emotionally or physically with my partner. I was just so dysregulated and so much of it. I mean, like probably 80% of the dysregulation I was feeling was coming from the meaning that my mind, that my ego was making out of the physical things I was experiencing. Like I really did have pelvic floor dysfunction. I really did. So thinking about it wasn't making me more anxious. I mean, or making the pelvic floor worse. I literally had pelvic floor dysfunction. That was a legit thing. But because I was assigning so much meaning to it about how my life was never going to be the same, I was never going to have sex again, I was never going to be able to pee without pain ever again, I was never going to be able to sit in a car and go on a trip or ride on a plane to go on a trip. Like I created all of this meaning out of what the physical symptoms were going to do for my life. So then the reality that I had because I was assigning meaning to the physical symptoms was a reality that was fueled with anxiety and insomnia. Do you see what I mean? So we make decisions a lot of times in split seconds without thinking about it. I mean, that's what most unconscious decisions are, is we feel something in our bodies and it's so uncomfortable, but we're not aware of how our thoughts have created that feeling. So then we react to it and we make decisions that don't make sense or that are irrational or that don't serve us very well. And that continues to create this life that we don't actually love. And the only way out is awareness. And that's why I say in literally all of my work, awareness is 90% of the battle. Like just being aware of your ego can be so helpful in learning how to live from your higher self instead of your ego. Just being aware that thinking thoughts creates a sensation in your body can be so helpful in making that connection between the mind and the body and the feelings that you're feeling. So that's why I'm all about like trauma education and nervous system education, because we can go so far whenever we have the knowledge and the information. Like that alone can help us heal just by having the right knowledge. Because then your ego is no longer trying to assign meaning to your lack of knowledge. Like, oh, none of this ever works for me. I just can't get out of this. Maybe it works for you, but it doesn't work for me. I've tried everything. I've tried all that. I just can't do it. Like, that's what the ego says. The ego says, I've done all these things in the past, and the meaning that I assign to it is that it doesn't work for me, that my case is somehow special. Again, that's just ego. I mean, I don't want to say it's just ego, like minimizing the ego. Like, our egos can do some real damage. And I've personally experienced that. So I want to read some more from Eckhart. All right. So this is continuing on with what he says about emotions and the ego. So the voice of the ego continuously disrupts the body's natural state of well-being. Almost every human body is under a great deal of strain and stress, not because it is threatened by some external factor, but from within the mind. The body has an ego attached to it, and it cannot but respond to all the dysfunctional thought patterns that make up the ego. Thus, a stream of negative emotion accompanies the stream of incessant and compulsive thinking. What is a negative emotion? An emotion that is toxic to the body and interferes with its balance and harmonious functioning. Fear, anxiety, anger, bearing a grudge, sadness, hatred or intense dislike, jealousy, envy, all disrupt the energy flow through the body, affect the heart, the immune system, digestion, production of hormones, and so on. Even mainstream medicine, although it knows very little about how the ego operates yet, is beginning to recognize the connection between negative emotional states and physical disease. An emotion that does harm to the body also infects the people you come into contact with, and indirectly, through a process of chain reaction, countless others you never meet. There is a generic term for all negative emotions: unhappiness. Do positive emotions then have the opposite effect on the physical body? Do they strengthen the immune system, invigorate and heal the body? They do indeed. But we need to differentiate between positive emotions that are ego-generated and deeper emotions that emanate from your natural state of connectedness with being. Positive emotions generated by the ego already contain within themselves their opposite, into which they can quickly turn. Here are some examples. What the ego calls love is possessiveness and addictive clinging that can turn into hate within a second. Anticipation about an upcoming event, which is the ego's overvaluation of future, easily turns into its opposite, letdown or disappointment, when the event is over or doesn't fulfill the ego's expectations. Praise and recognition make you feel alive and happy one day. Being criticized or ignored make you dejected and unhappy the next. The pleasure of a wild party turns into bleakness and a hangover the next morning. There is not good without bad, no high without low. Ego-generated emotions are derived from the mind's identification with external factors, which are, of course, all unstable and liable to change at any moment. The deeper emotions are not really emotions at all, but states of being. Emotions exist within the realm of opposites. States of being can be obscured, but they have no opposite. They emanate from within you as love, joy, and peace that are aspects of your true nature. So, if we're going to consciously create a reality that isn't ruled by the past, meaning a reality that isn't ruled by the stories that we've told ourselves of, I'm not worthy of love, there's never enough money, I'll never have enough time, I'll never get to do the things I want, no one can be trusted. Like when we live our lives from that place, then we're definitely living in ego. And also, we're living in ego whenever we're trying to live in this like quote-unquote toxic positivity where it's like only good vibes only. I can only think happy thoughts. I can only feel happiness and love. Everything is love and light. Like, because that can be the ego's creation as well, right? Nobody is love and light all the time. Nobody is good vibes only all the time. So the ego can, you know, swing in the total opposite direction, and we can become so attached to only wanting to feel happiness, only wanting to feel peace, only wanting to feel success. And because the ego is attached to the outcome of that, then, as he said, the opposite always ends up happening. So then again, our ego is still unconsciously creating our reality. So the way out, how do we start to create a reality consciously? Awareness. That's literally it. Awareness of how thoughts create feelings in your body. Awareness of what your feelings feel like in your body. I can't tell you how many people I work with that when they tell me that they're feeling anxious and I say, what does anxiety feel like in your body? They're like, well, you know, I just can't stop thinking. I just can't shut my mind off. And I have to be like, no, that's just telling me what you're thinking. What does anxiety feel like in your body? How do you know you're feeling anxious? Well, because I can't, like, I have so much brain fog and I can't think straight. And I'm like, again, no, this isn't about your thinking. I understand that anxiety can create brain fog. Like, absolutely, that's valid. But you felt a sensation in your body in a millisecond that your brain translated into, I feel anxiety. So what was that sensation? And getting people back in touch with how their thoughts create sensations can be hugely instrumental in shifting from that unconscious, egoic place of creating a reality into a conscious and aware place of creating a reality. Awareness usually starts pretty slow. You can gain a lot of awareness just from listening to an episode like this, and it's giving you information and education that can be really eye-opening and mind-opening and body-opening, and you can be like, oh, I get it now. So now you have an intellectual understanding, which is great. It can start with an intellectual understanding, but remember, you feel feelings in your body, so this has to be an embodied process as well. So you create a different reality for yourself when you, one, notice the thoughts, two, notice the feelings that the thoughts are creating, and three, notice how you make decisions based on those thoughts and feelings. So if the decisions that you're making aren't the reality that you want to create for yourself, then you have to go back to the thoughts and the sensations in your body and change how you're reacting and actually not reacting at all. Like, we want you to do the opposite of reacting, which is to consciously make a choice. You want to respond to the feelings, not react to the feelings. So you can do that by just slowly practicing being in awareness, noticing when your thoughts are creating feelings, and noticing how you're making choices when you're feeling those feelings. Like, when I was feeling all of that anxiety, I was creating a reality that was anxiety-ridden and lonely and isolated because the choice I was making from that bodily sensation was to isolate myself. So of course, that was the reality I created. So how are your thoughts creating sensations in your body? And notice what the sensations are. Get specific. Get specific. Like, is it a burning feeling in your throat? Is it a knot in your throat? Is it pounding in your heart? Is it a twisting in your gut? Is it tightness in your pelvic floor? Is it tension in your neck and shoulders? Is it your jaw clenching? Is it your hands clenching? Like, what is it? Get really, really specific. The more specific you can get, the better, because then you're getting back in touch with the body. And you can notice the feeling in the body, and if you can, lean into it. I remember when I was first starting to make these connections for myself, and I would feel so much anxiety in my throat. It was like a super tight knot in my throat, and I would drink tons of water, and I would swallow all the time because I was trying to swallow this knot down. And when I finally realized that my racing thoughts, because let me tell you something, my brain could win an Olympic gold medal in racing. It just could. So when I was having all these racing thoughts and I noticed that that was creating this tightness in my throat, I didn't try to go shut the thoughts off. I didn't try to go back to meditation and be like, okay, I just need to sit here and I need to watch the thoughts like, you know, clouds floating across the sky or a stick floating down the river, because I knew that wasn't going to work for me. For me, it had to come from my body. And meditation often can be such a mental thing for a lot of people. And we want to get out of our heads, right? Like that's the whole point, is to get out of our heads and get back into our bodies. But eventually we have to get back into our heads because that's where we're making decisions from. You know, you can have an embodied knowing, like that would be your intuition is an embodied knowing. But when you make whatever choice you're making or whatever decision you're making it, your body is then communicating back to your mind. And your mind is like, this is my decision. This is what my intuition is telling me. This is how I know what yes feels like. And this is how I know what no feels like. It's not an intellectual knowing. It's an embodied knowing. So get back into the body. And when I had all this anxiety, I would literally close my eyes and I would focus on the knot in my throat. And I would just, I would put all of my energy and attention on that knot in my throat and I would sit with it. Oh, I would sit with it. And it was so uncomfortable. But I noticed that as I sat with it, it got less and less and less. Just because I noticed it, because I wasn't thinking about it anymore, I was being with it. I was being with the feeling. I was being in the feeling. I wasn't thinking about the feeling anymore. So if you don't know how to get into your body, if you hear me and other people talking about getting out of your head and into your body, and you don't know what that feels like or what that means, it literally, for me, it means whatever I'm feeling in my body, I'm going to put all of my attention on it. So if I'm feeling pain, then I'm going to put all my attention on that pain. If I'm feeling heart palpitations, I'm going to put all of my focus on those heart palpitations. If I'm feeling tension in my neck or my shoulders or my pelvic floor, I'm going to put all of my attention on that tension. That's dropping back into the body. That can feel really uncomfortable at first. In fact, don't be surprised if it feels real uncomfortable. Don't be surprised if you can only be in your body for a few seconds or a few minutes at a time. That's okay. It's new. It's unfamiliar. It will get more familiar the more you practice it. But that is awareness. It's not just awareness of the thoughts. It's also awareness of how the thoughts create feelings in your body. And then a step further, how those feelings in your body cause you to react and make decisions that are creating a life you don't want. I don't want to live a lonely and isolated life. Of course I don't. I have a beautiful community. I have amazing friends and people in my life. So if I constantly choose not to be with my people, then I'm creating a lifestyle or a life of a reality of loneliness and isolation. Like that's just the way it works. But if I recognize, oh, I'm having these racing thoughts, that's creating this anxiety, because I'm having this feeling of anxiety in my body, the reaction that I want to have from a place of unawareness is to not hang out with my friends, to isolate myself, to, you know, be socially outside or cut off or whatever. But because that social cutoff life isn't what I want, that's not the reality I want, then I can choose differently. And I can go, you know what? I'm having these thoughts that's creating this feeling of anxiety in my body. I don't want a reality where I'm isolated and lonely. So I'm going to lean in even further. I'm going to feel this feeling in my body. And also, I'm going to choose to call my friend and tell her that I need to come over and have some tea. Or I'm going to, you know, have a little dinner party and invite a couple of couples that we're really close to over just for dinner. It can be as simple as that, as just noticing what the feeling makes you want to do unconsciously and then choosing something else. So I hope this was helpful. thank you so much for listening. And if you have any questions or anything to add or want to have discussion about this, please bring it to the community forum. The community forum has been quiet lately, and that's okay. I'm okay with quiet, but our community has grown. And so I would like to see all of you come to the forum more often. I know you're all experiencing things in your lives that you might want help with or support with. I know you're all on your own journeys and you may have questions as you go. That's what our forum is for. We're all in this together. So come to the forum, come talk about your ego and emotions, come see the other discussions that we have going on and weigh in. This is how we connect with each other. This is how we create this community. We have to be intentional about it, and we can't just think about it. We have to actually do it. So thank you for listening. Thank you for being here. I am so grateful that you're in my circle, and I hope this episode was supportive of you, and I will talk to you soon.